This is The World in Words. I'm Nina Porzuki. And before I get into the podcast, I wanted to just take a moment and ask you all a favor. So we've created this online survey to find out more about you guys, how you listen, what you like to listen to. It's short and sweet, and Patrick and I would really, really, really appreciate it if you took it and shared your thoughts. You can find the survey at pri.org/podcast survey. Again, that's pri.org/podcast survey. I promise it'll only take a few minutes. You're the best. On to the show.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor.
Recognize that sound? It's the sweet sound of Scrabble tiles being shooken up. Okay, so I'll admit, I have never been a great Scrabble player. I'm so slow. My friends and family complain that I take too long to decide what letters to use, and then after like 20 minutes, I just make 3 points. And I know home Scrabble is nothing like professional Scrabble.
It's very serious. You have to know your words, you have to know your strategy, and you have to be able to concentrate for long periods of time. And you have to know all the maths behind it as well. So it's a lot different from living room Scrabble, definitely.
Those are comments from a competitive Scrabble player at the 2011 World Scrabble Championship. Nigel Richards from New Zealand was crowned the World Scrabble Champion that year. He also won championships in 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2012, yes, 2013. And this year, Richards, bored by Scrabble in English, took on the Francophone World Scrabble Championship, and he won. Thing is, he doesn't actually speak French.
Francophone America, Nigel Richards.
Richards is notoriously media shy, but The World's host Aaron Schachter recently spoke with journalist Stefan Fastus, who's had the chance to interview Richards. Fastus is the author of Word Freak, Heartbreak, Triumph, Genius, and Obsession in the World of Competitive Scrabble Players.
Stefan, you've written about this Scrabble virtuoso, Nigel Richards. What makes him so enigmatic, as you called him in your piece?
What makes him enigmatic is his personality. And he's got this big, long beard that goes down to about the middle of his chest. He's perceived as a sort of reclusive figure in Scrabble. He approaches the game in a very, very different way than most players. He just plays and then he's done. Most players will sit around after a game and try to resolve where the mistakes were, what the best play might have been, why they lost or why they won. Nigel sort of sits there placidly. Game is over. He's done looking at it. He's ready for the next game. But what really makes him different is this inexplicable mental acuity, the ability to ingest and memorize hundreds of thousands of words in English and now in French.
Does he have a photographic memory or something?
Well, when I interviewed him a long time ago for Word Freak back in 1999, actually, before he was a championship player, but he was an up-and-coming sort of prodigy genius, he actually talked to me about that. And he doesn't give interviews. No matter how many championships he wins, and he's won 5 in North America and 3 world championships, he just doesn't like to talk to the press. But he described to me this unusual process of learning words. And for him, it was looking at each page of the dictionary and creating a photographic image of what was on the page, and then recalling in his mind the bold-faced words. All that matters is the order of the letters. And Nigel described to me how he would go on these long, long bike rides, and he would bring up in his brain an image of the page that he wanted to review. And then he would go to the next page and the next page. He's the sort of person that can say, oh yes, I learned that word and it was on page 832 of that dictionary.
But he must somehow memorize how the word is pronounced, right? Because if a word is said in French, you know, how do you connect how it's pronounced to what you see on a page?
I don't think it matters. And in the case of the French dictionary, I don't know how Nigel learned the words. My hunch is that he looked at the words sans definitions and just memorized the letter strings. Because when you get down to it, Scrabble is not a game about language. You don't need to know definitions. You don't need to know anything. It's certainly helpful to know how something is pluralized, whether it takes an S or not in usage. But ultimately, all that matters is that you know the order in which the letters go. There have been great Thai Scrabble players who barely speak English and have won a world championship or two and done extremely well in English language tournaments. So it is not a function of your native speaking ability. It's a function of being able to process the order in which the letters appear in particular words. Is this string of letters acceptable or is it not?
Has Nigel won any other competitions in a foreign language?
Not to my knowledge, and I think I would know. It would have certainly spread in the Scrabble world if he had pulled off something this audacious in the past. My hunch is that he sort of has gotten bored with the 260,000 words in the International English Language Scrabble Dictionary or the 190,000 words in the North American English Language Scrabble Dictionary and wanted a new mental challenge and saw on the calendar that, oh, the French World Championship is going to be played in a couple of months. I will devote the next couple of months to learning all of the words in the French Scrabble Dictionary.
Well, you can certainly appreciate getting bored with the 190,000 words.
I know. You know. I mean, come on. It's only 190,000.
Oh, geez.
Give me a real challenge.
Is there big money in the professional game?
You know, I wouldn't call it big money, but it's money enough. Nigel has certainly earned multiple $100,000 in the last decade or so playing Scrabble. You're not going to get rich playing Scrabble, but that's not why Scrabble players play. They play because they love the thrill of sort of decoding the language and mastering this wonderful strategic game.
Stefan Fatsis is the author of Word Freak, Heartbreak, Triumph, Genius, and Obsession in the World of Competitive Scrabble Players. Stefan, who knew that was out there?
I did.
Except for you. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
190,000 words to memorize? No problem. I swear it's all about those two-letter words. Okay, switching subjects for a bit to talk more about accents. Thanks to everyone who listened to the Accent Tag video podcast. That was the last podcast. If you haven't, go back one. It's really fun. So accents. One of my favorite accents is the Scottish accent. Here's a taste from Scottish comedian Billy Connolly.
I think we better explain a wee bit of Glasgow accent so as you can get used to it. And I could do it with this wee story. There was a young Glasgow chap, and he was trying to phone his girlfriend, and he was in a great deal of trouble. So he dialed the operator. She says, "Hello?" He says, "Hello, Terry, operator now." Oh. And she says, "Yes." He says, "Well, wait a minute, know what I mean? I'm trying to phone that daft bird of mine, know what I mean? Putting money in and pressing all the daft buttons now, no. I'm losing a play trying to get it here, know what I mean?"
I have no idea what he means, but it's a joy to listen to. But listen while you can. The Scottish accent is changing. Well, slowly changing, but it's still changing. Researchers in Scotland say that Scots aren't pronouncing some of their R's the way that they used to. Eleanor Lawson, she's a sociolinguist at Queen Margaret University in Edinburgh. She recently worked on a study looking at the Scottish R, and she spoke with the world's Aaron Schachter.
There are actually lots of Scottish R's. Probably the most stereotypical one is the trilled R, so the R sound.
Uh-huh.
And although that's a stereotype, it's really not that common now in Scottish English. It's been on the way out for quite some time.
What would be a sentence with that R?
If I said something like real or right, that would be a trilled R. I actually find that quite hard to produce R that way. Another kind of R that we have is something called a tapped R, and you would find that in words like broom and prove and very and sorry. So it tends to be at the beginning of words or in the middle of words. So it's a single flick of the tongue out towards the back of the teeth.
Okay, tapped R, yeah.
And the kind of R that we were interested in is the R that you find at the end of a word. So in words like car or card, first or fur, what we found was that some Scottish speakers were producing these R's very weakly. In fact, it sounded as if they were maybe deleting them completely. So you would have productions that would sound something like ka, bust, ba. There's something there that makes it sound like, yes, there might be an R there, but it's hard to hear a distinct R segment.
That actually sounds very Boston.
Very does much, it?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
You know, the Harvard Yard instead of Harvard Yard.
In Boston, Anglo-English speakers tend to have lost the R at the end of words.
Uh-huh.
This is something distinct. It's probably a local sound change. We looked at what the speakers were doing using ultrasound to look at their tongue movements. And what we found was, to our surprise, the speakers were still producing the R, but they were just timing it late so that it would be inaudible. It would be in the silence after the vocal cords had stopped vibrating, or it would be masked by a following consonant sound. So they're still producing the sound. It just doesn't sound as clear as it used to.
When did you notice this happening? How long has this been going on?
We think this has been going on for a very long time, and we're certainly not the first people to have noticed it. There was a study in the late 70s and another study carried out in the early 80s, and they both noticed in vernacular Scottish speech that there were these weak R's at the end of words. So it's been around for at least 3 decades, but probably much, much longer. And it seems to be a slow-moving sound change.
I bet you're going to blame this on McDonald's and American TV, right?
No, certainly not. I wouldn't even blame it on British TV either. I don't think it's a case of exposure to media. I think it's a natural sound change. There's certainly a social element to it as well. Those who have strong Scottish accents, maybe more working-class people than middle-class people. But I don't think it's a case of contact with Anglo-English speakers or contact with the media or anything like that.
So does this really matter? I mean, is there something wrong with this, or is this just kind of an observation?
There's nothing wrong with it, but there's been an awful lot of interest in the media recently with, you know, the idea that Scottish speakers are losing their R's. And I do remember as an undergraduate student being asked to transcribe some recordings made in Glasgow and being very upset that they didn't seem to be producing their R's, because it's such a part of the Scottish identity, is the fact that we produce R at the end of words and Anglo-English speakers don't. It's not the end of the world. It's, as I said, it's a slow-moving sound change. Languages change all the time.
Well, but you still have the other two R's that you were talking about. You just said the word world with a bit of a trill there on your R, and there's still the R at the beginning of the word.
Yes, and I should point out that not all Scottish speakers are weakening their R's. In fact, some of them are actually moving in the opposite direction, and they are strengthening their R. When we looked at these speakers' R's with ultrasound, what we found was that they were producing something we didn't expect, a kind of R called a bunched R. And that kind of R is quite strongly associated with American English. It's one of the types of R that American English speakers use. So these Scottish speakers see things like fur and fern and bird.
Instead of what?
Instead of fur and bird and fern.
Bird.
So, yes, they have a really strong kind of R type sound.
Is this, Eleanor, maybe some kind of slippery slope? Does some other characteristic of the Scottish accent follow this?
There are other changes, again, slow-moving changes. We have a couple of consonants that are known as the Scottish consonants. These are the ch sound that you have in loch and the wh sound that you have in when and why and where.
Ah.
And again, they're on the way out in vernacular speech. So speakers will say loch now instead of loch. They'll say why, when, and where.
Do you think it's just because those sounds are easier?
There are some very complicated linguistic explanations for why wh is disappearing, why it lasted for so long. Wh is the remnant of a set of Old English initial clusters. So there was hr and hl and hn and wh. And where's the last of them? So
you can see why those went away. Come on, those are impossible.
Well, why did hw last longer than the rest of them? I think nobody complains about the fact that hr has gone. Nobody complains about the days when we used to say hr. For some reason, hw has been strongly associated with the Scottish accent. And I think that's why people feel sad about it going now. But again, it's just these are just natural sound change processes.
Well, I certainly hope the accent doesn't go away altogether, because it's really lovely.
It definitely won't.
Good. Eleanor Lawson is a sociolinguist at Queen Margaret University in Edinburgh. She was working on a joint study with the University of Glasgow to study the Scottish R. Eleanor, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Hope you could get something out of that.
That was great.
Oh, great. Well done.
So I'm not even going to attempt a Scottish accent. That would not be great. And that's all for now. I'm Nina Porzucchi. I'm on Twitter at Porzucchi, that's P-O-R-Z-U-C-C-H-I. C-U-C-K-I. I'm going to be out for a few weeks, and you're going to get to hear Patrick Cox, the regular host of this podcast, in the next few episodes. So thanks for listening, and I'll be back soon.
And welcome back to Celebrity Jeopardy. Before we begin the double Jeopardy round, I'd like to apologize to our Asian viewers. We should have known having Chinese history as a category would lead to some highly offensive accents from our contestants. That said, let's take a look at the score. Sean Connery currently sits at negative $3,000.
And your mother currently sits on my face, Trebek.
Way too early for that. Way too early.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.